Good evening and welcome to episode 20, or podcast 20, I should say, of Total Football Debate. I'm Jason. He's Scott. Are you there, Scott?
Of course I'm here. How are we
here?
All?
He's here. The big 2-0, who would have thought it? Brings back some memories, doesn't it?
Yeah, takes us back, doesn't it, to episode one when it was all about the Euros, wasn't it? Little idea that just cropped up in our heads, and here we are in what, the second or whatever it is now, international break of the Premier League season. So many games in and already approaching that Christmas period now, aren't we?
Yeah, I remember my first podcast, I'll tell you that. But no, we are. We've done well. So, as we alluded to in the last podcast, we're taking a slightly different avenue than we traditionally would, because it is an international break. So, unfortunately for Newcastle fans, we decided to break away from the Premier League for a week and discuss the rest of Europe. Obviously, there was big news on Tyneside this week. We will cover that next week in more detail. We said we were going to have our version of Brexit. Newcastle did one better and decided to basically come out of the EU altogether and relocate to the Golden Kingdom. We're not going quite that drastic, but we will be covering the leagues across Europe. We will be covering the Champions League, the Europa League, and the newly formed Conference League, which I'm sure Scott will be delighted about because it's the only thing Spurs look positive in at the moment. Of course, we don't do things normally, and Scott will be delighted to tell you, well, I'll let Scott have this moment actually, but he'll be delighted that his favourite part of the podcast is basically going to form the whole of this bloody podcast. So Scott, why don't you tell him what we've got coming up?
The Wheel of Wonder, it got its promotion. It got a promotion, Jace. Well deserved, off the back of a hell of a lot of feedback. You know, endless messages. When's the Wheel of Wonder just going to take up the whole show? So, you know, I've got to give everyone what they want.
Try convincing yourself. I mean.
For good measure, we're going to play the theme. It practically might as well have been the intro to the show. So let's take it back. Let's make it the intro to the show.
Good evening and welcome to episode 20, or podcast 20, I should say, of Total Football Debate.
It's going a bit far now. It's not quite what I signed up for here.
You're part of it whether you like it or not, I'm afraid. Part of it whether you like it or not. But yes, the Wheel of Wonder forms the whole show this week and just gives us a bit of a, you know, keeps us on our toes, bearing in mind we haven't got a league summary to do or anything like that. We're banned from discussing anything Premier League. And yeah, we're still going to spin the wheel and see where we land. So from what I can see, we have, I believe, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different topics, leagues, competitions, whatever you want to call them. And we have a good back and forth about them. And the only thing that sort of mirrors previous episodes is at the end of the show, we've obviously got to do the only Premier League segment that will happen in this whole show and do our predictions for next week, or should I say this weekend. Should we get started, Jace?
Spin that wheel and tell us where we're going first.
I will. I'm going to spin it right now. Here we go then. Well, I tell you what, you might as well start as you mean to go on. Let's start with a bang and land in arguably the biggest competition on the wheel. We have landed straight onto the Champions League. Ooh. What a way to start.
Ooh.
Well, we go back to what? Two games. We're on, I think, game day 3 in the Champions League. So,
yeah.
We need to take it back. Firstly, we've got the groups. I mean, I don't know whether we take it back to the groups and see, you know, how they shaped up. And then crack on from there, really.
Well, Group A, ironically, one of the pick of the groups, Paris Saint-Germain, Club Brugge, City and RB Leipzig. Group B, equally as impressive in terms of calibre, Liverpool, Atletico, Porto and AC Milan. Group C, Besiktas, Lisbon, Sporting, that is Dortmund and Ajax. Group D, Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Shakhtar and Sheriff. Group E, equally as impressive to be fair, Benfica, Bayern, Dynamo and Barcelona. Group F, Atalanta, Young Boys, Man United and Villarreal. Group G, Salzburg, Sevilla, Wolfsburg and Lille. And finally, Group F, Juve, Juventus, to those that don't know, Chelsea, Zenit and Malmo. So actually, in terms of the calibre, I said Group A and Group B were fairly acquaint, but it's fair to say that you can look at a few of those groups and say, not really sure who to go with there.
You would have thought it would have been pretty self-explanatory, some of them, but I think the fact that we're two games in, and let's be honest, the Champions League can easily turn on its head and go back to being, you know, pretty straightforward. And all of a sudden, the traditional one and twos that you thought would come out will come out. But if you were to look at it right now, I think that it's fair to say a lot of them groups are not following the script.
Well, oddly,
which is really interesting. So go on, Jace, where do you want to start?
Well, I'm not going to stick with our folk in England, that's for sure. But I would like to start with Group D.
Shock.
And I have to say, well, what a story. Sheriff, top of the league, played 2-1-2, even scored 4 goals while they're at it, and they've only conceded 1. Against Shakhtar, you could argue, you know, that game was less obvious, but Shakhtar have been fairly decent, you know, when they have been present. You think some of the players that have come from there and, you know, come across to Europe, but, you know, to win there, but then also to go to the Bernabeu. I mean, let's talk about the audacity of that. To go to the Bernabeu and beat Real Madrid, that takes some going. No doubt about it. They are, yeah, you've got big names in there that are performing and, you know, Liverpool have been on fire. Paris Saint-Germain are obviously kind of top of that kind of cluster of teams in their group. But that by far and wide for me is the biggest success story of the Champions League so far.
Well, I mean, that's your highlight. And to be fair, I would have been doing a bit of injustice if I was told to go first and didn't pick them. But if you're going to go the complete opposite end of the scale, if it's not Sheriff that are the story of the Champions League, you would probably go one group down to the next Spanish giant and say that in Group E, there's another story forming, which puts the Catalan giants rock bottom of their group with not a single goal scored. And in both games, 3 goals conceded. Yes, you could say it's Bayern Munich that beat them, but they beat them on their own turf. And then for Benfica to go and spank them 3-0 as well. I mean, you talk about, you think FC Sheriff are through, bearing in mind Real Madrid are on 3 points, Inter on 1, Shakhtar on 1. Well, when you see Barcelona on 0 and Benfica on 4 and Bayern on 6, you start to wonder, is that the end of the road for them?
Yeah, and it, you know, it's an interest. I mean, from a revenue perspective, it could obviously be quite devastating for them because at the moment, I mean, they could still yet get Europa League, but if they don't get that, in the absence of that and the Champions League, it's nothing more than a mitigating disaster, really, for Barcelona, which has been, in fairness, the story of their season. But it's an interesting one with Barca, you know, because a lot of stick goes towards Ronald Koeman, how he's not good enough and this and that and the other. But then I look about it from the different perspective of their league position, think, well, could anyone really do a better job than he's doing right now. They're a club in transition. Plenty of folk can relate to that. Man City have been there. Newcastle are about to go there. Tottenham at various points in recent history have gone there. Nothing to this extent, of course. This is the complete opposite. Man City fell into riches. Newcastle have. Spurs have kind of ebbed and flowed and kind of got with the times a bit. Barcelona, though, look, as a football club, not just on the pitch, but externally, they look incredibly vulnerable. And it kind of reminds me of the Barcelona kind of pre-Ronaldinho, so kind of pre-2002, where they went through that period of time for 2 or 3 years where they just, I didn't quite, you know, they finished kind of fifth, sixth in La Ligas, and, you know, that wasn't quite hitting the sweet spot. And then obviously Ronaldinho set them alight and they got Samuel Eto'o, and then, well, the rest is history. But clearly there's massive issues there. And, you know, to see them decimated, as you said, you know, again, Bayern Munich have decimated them before. But I mean, you know, for Benfica, and Benfica aren't a bad team, but to get decimated by Benfica, I mean, you know, there's problems, and they're not playing the true Barca way. They look a bit lost. You know, they've got young players there. So it's going to be tough for them. It really is. But the consequences, I fear for them, if they don't even reach, you know, kind of your Europa League spot after this fallout, is going to be immense and probably add more pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is. We'll talk about them more, as you say, in the La Liga, because obviously it's a major talking point what's going on there and how that league, you know, a ball hadn't even been kicked and we were rocked by what was going on at Barcelona and the whole Messi situation. And, well, let's go in alphabetical order. And I mean, you know, it wasn't intended, but it was a perfect roll-in, bearing in mind I just mentioned the guy. We go to Group A then, work our way down, and we land on, you know, Lionel's new club, PSG. But another, you know, interesting story when you talk about, you know, Man City sitting in third, 6-3 over Leipzig, losing to PSG. PSG drawing to Club Brugge prior to that. I mean, for big teams, you know, they're two teams that, well, Man City more so, you'd say now, that really, really, really need to be winning this Champions League for them to be rubber stamped as one of the biggest contenders. I mean, look, we forget that PSG haven't even done this. Who needs it more, Jace?
Well, here's the thing. For me, who needs it most would be Paris Saint-Germain. Reason being is, for, you know, we talk about it in England as Pep needs that to show that he's really taken Man City to the jewel, you know, and Man United won the Champions League, obviously, a couple of times under Fergie and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is with Pep, no matter what happens, he will always be the one that took them, well, as we know them now, the way they play. Obviously, City had success before Pep with Mancini, but if you look at the sustainability, you know, Pep's been up there. But also, not only that, is he's done it wherever he's gone. When you talk about the Champions League in isolation of league, so if we ignore all the leagues and you think about Man City and Paris Saint-Germain, who needs it for? Who needs it more? For me, I would argue that actually Paris Saint-Germain are the ones that need to win it and get it over the line, because I know I just said they're taking the leagues out of isolation. You know, yeah, they win major honours. They might win Ligue 1. They might win the, you know, kind of the French equivalents of the FA Cups and League Cups. But the amount of money that's been invested in that team, surely, surely they need the biggest prize in the game. And especially for me, when, you know, they've had Mbappe now, they've had so much talent come to that club. But the one thing that they don't have, that Man City have, is where Pep's been very good, and previous managers like Roberto Mancini have been very good at City is that they've molded a team that work together. For me at Paris Saint-Germain, it doesn't strike me that they have that cohesive unit as a team. And it's very well and good on paper having all the individuals, you know, that front three of Neymar, Messi and Mbappe. But where has it got them? And another thing is as well, and I was thinking about this the other day, and we'll touch on this, I'm sure, at some point in the future, because we'll introduce it to our listeners, is look at Neymar. Since he's moved to Paris Saint-Germain, his stock has dropped dramatically. Like, when he was at Barca, he was playing for fun with the likes of, you know, Suarez and Messi, and, you know, he did look immense, like he was fulfilling that potential. Since coming to Paris Saint-Germain, I don't really rate him at all, to be fair.
It's crazy to think he's 29 as well, isn't it?
Well, you tell me, right, when he was at Barca, he was rightfully, and rightfully so at the time, he was spoken about as one of the best players in the world. And I would agree at that time, when he was with Messi and Suarez, without a doubt, they were unbelievable. But he's come to Paris Saint-Germain to be the standout golden boy because he supposedly wanted to be out of Messi's shadow. When you look at Messi and how old Messi is and the fact that season after season after season, no matter what was going on off the field, he turned up and was still brilliant and still produced. And you look at Ronaldo and his age and season after season after season, no matter where he's gone, he's still doing it. Even now at United, what is he, 4 or 5 games into his United career? And look how many goals he's got already. You look at Neymar, and yeah, he might be bagging goals in like league, you know, French league and all this, but the whole concept of him moving there as the most expensive player in the world was to take them to the next level. Like, the French league, they should be walking anyway, to be fair. So the Champions League was the crown jewel. And I don't think he can be considered in the top 5 or even top 10 players in the world right now, to be quite frank.
You know, since he joined PSG, which was back in the summer of 2017, so he's been there, what, 4 years now? The same amount of time that he was actually, funny enough, at Barcelona, he was there for 4 years. And this is a Neymar that now should be, well, the PSG Neymar should be way more informed than the Barcelona Neymar, bearing in mind, as it's proven, as you get older, you know, you hit peak. And he's actually, for Barcelona, he played 186 games, 105 goals, 76 assists. In the same amount of time, he's played 63 games less at PSG. So he's played 123 games, scored 88 goals, and 54 assists. So in that same tenor at being at Paris Saint-Germain, he's only played 75 league games.
Yeah, that's
since in 4 years, Jace. That's mad. I mean, how do you, well, that I'd assume that's probably starting 70. Well, it might not even be that, to be honest. I mean, I'm looking at it here, and he played last season only 18 games. The season before that, he played 15 games. He hasn't played 20 games or more since the 17-18 season in League One.
Yeah. And you see, for me, this is so, you know, going back to the original thought of who needs it more. Paris, and when you look comparatively about, you know, Paris Saint-Germain had a similar story to Man City, right? They're a big, you know, in terms of club, you know, they've always been a big club with a big presence in Paris, right? But they've never been up there for the major, major honours as such. Not that I know the ins and outs of their history, but if you looked at their trajectory and the pattern they've gone on since they had their owners came in, so basically the Qatari investment fund, they're all bloody investment funds nowadays. But if you look at pound for pound, the spend and level of spend and what they've got. Now, on paper, you'd argue that they've got a bloody amazing team, like both teams, City and Paris Saint-Germain. But one thing City have always managed to do that Paris Saint-Germain haven't is build a cohesive team. And you read all the time about, you know, Neymar and Mbappe potentially falling out with Di Maria and so and so. And it's clear you can have all the best, you could have the best, you could have 18 of the best players in the world in your team out of the top 20. But unless they gel, unless they work together, unless they work for each other, then it's all in vain. For me, Paris Saint-Germain need it more. Will they get it? I don't think so. I think there are better teams in the Champions League. Man City, ironically, being one of them. Liverpool being up there. You can't see Paris Saint-Germain beating, you know, the likes of kind of Chelsea, Bayern Munich, or, you know, kind of Inter Madrid, those type of names, or even Liverpool, to be fair. Like, you can't see Paris Saint-Germain beating either of those, to be honest.
When you talk about two teams that desperately need this, they've landed in the same group, no doubt about it. I don't think there's any more two teams out there that need this title more. Not because, you know, I'm not saying Man United don't want it or anything, but Man United would be happy with the league title right now. Man City and PSG have won their leagues in and out. And PSG, let's be fair, the league means nothing, really, in context. A manager could get sacked. If they went out of the group stages here, but won the league the year before, I bet he'd be sacked. No doubt about it. So when you talk about, you know, context, and as I said before, I think Man City would happily, year on year, give another team the league title if it meant them automatically getting to the semi-finals every season and having three-game attempt of winning that trophy. I think they'd actually give up the league and say, even though we're not guaranteeing we'll win the Champions League, get into the semi-final, give us the semi-final and we'll happily let anyone else win the league. That's how much I think they need it. And more so enhanced by the fact that in recent years, Chelsea, who beat them in the final, have won it. Liverpool have won it. You know, it adds more pressure. And I mean, speaking of Liverpool, I can't even see Man City at this moment in time turning them over when it comes to the competition, because I just think Liverpool have so much experience and know what it takes to win. And lo and behold, you know, probably expected, but two games, two wins, convincing wins, 3-2 over AC Milan, the way they turned that around, 5-1 winners at Porto.
I still wouldn't write Milan off, you know. Atletico obviously got 4 points in the bag, but they're on their day more than capable of picking up the mantle, so we'll see. But yeah, I don't see Liverpool clearly. For me, they're the outright favourites of the group and arguably probably the favourites for the tournament, in fairness as well, for me.
Yeah, I don't think you're far wrong there, to be fair. Coming to Group C, now I would probably say that the next fixture in this, which funny enough is the top two teams, is one of the highlight matches of the tournament.
Yeah, I'd agree. Two great teams, play great football the right way, arguably. Both got great history. I think the pair of them, they'll end up going through. I don't think Besiktas or Sporting have a cat-tail chance in making up the points required. So, yeah, it'll make for a good game. Arguably for Dortmund, they'll want to perform well and there's probably more pressure on them to try and get through this group and do as well as they can. Obviously, plenty of speculation on Haaland. So, and they'll need to make the most of that. Jude Bellingham as well coming into his own. So it'll be good for them to finish top of the group, I think, just to give them a bit of oomph going into the knockout phases. But I think that group is probably a foregone conclusion, I should think.
Yeah, I'd have thought so. I mean, these two next games, Ajax, Dortmund, home and away, in the space of a few weeks, is going to be really interesting to see which one of the two comes out on top, because Ajax are looking, ever since that amazing season where they unfortunately fell at the last hurdle, surprised everyone, have been consistently building up an exciting team. Really got a great group in this draw. When you look at those teams in and around the groups, you know, Liverpool having AC Milan, Leipzig in the PSG Man City group, Inter, probably wouldn't be in it, it would have been Real Madrid and Inter, and then probably Shakhtar. You've then got Man United, Villarreal, and then Atalanta. I would have said Ajax were one of the hardest ones. And to come out in a group with Dortmund, Besiktas and Sporting, almost put them favourites with Dortmund. I'd probably say Dortmund slightly edged that, but then with the Sancho exit, you didn't know. But, I mean, them two definitely, whoever finishes second is going to give one of the top teams a run for their money, that's for sure. Both great style of football. And the Ajax manager, I think all eyes are on him. You know, he was touted in the summer as maybe being a manager for one of the clubs that were looking for one, and he ended up staying. But I know Barca have got their eye on him, that's for sure. But Ten Hag still continues to build a great squad over there. I think that one's kind of painted its own picture. I mean, we've already discussed Group D with Sheriff being top, Real Madrid second. That should never be happening, but it is. Probably one I still could see Real Madrid and Inter going through in, bearing in mind there's still four games to go. But then we come to Group E. Obviously, we mentioned Barcelona and being bottom. That one looks a little bit more, you know, looks like it's almost taking a final, final picture there.
I don't think there's anything exciting to...
No.
Yeah, excited about that one.
We come to your favourite in Group F. Though we're not discussing the Premier League, you still get a chance to highlight Ollie's failures. Atalanta and Young Boys ahead of Man United and Villarreal in Group F.
Where do you start? I mean, folks on Man United, that game against Villarreal, they did not deserve to nick it the way they did at the end there. Villarreal pushed them and pushed them and asked question after question. And even Ronaldo, to a point, didn't really make an impact until obviously that last kick of the game where he came on and managed to get the ball in the net. But so they scraped the win there. They've already lost to Young Boys. I mean, Atalanta, there's not going to be easy for them. If that was Alex Ferguson, he'd look at that group and he would walk it. He'd beat Villarreal. He'd most certainly beat Young Boys. And he'd say, right, you know, Atalanta, we'll get them by the scruff of the neck. But you just don't know under Rolly what Man United is going to turn up. And he's just, for me, he's a fish out of water. I'm not going to bang on about it, but I still see them struggling to get out of this group. Unless Pogba or Ronaldo rescue, you take Pogba and Ronaldo out of the team, he really becomes irrelevant because he wouldn't know how to win if those two weren't in the team for me.
Yeah, I mean, Atalanta, I know they're not doing as good as they were last season in the league, but that's not an easy game. Even if Man United win the home one, the away one's going to be a challenge in itself. And then they've got Villarreal away from home. It's way too close for their liking, I think. I just think they should have been, looking at that group and saying, well, it's between Atalanta and Villarreal, boys, for second. You should not even be debating. Man United, the fact that they're still competing with what you could say are Europa League teams, Villarreal and Atalanta. Villarreal, well known for it. Yeah, they should be looking at Liverpool and going, Porto and AC Milan, not in our league. Atletico Madrid, maybe. But Man United, I mean, Liverpool would be on 6 points in that group. No doubt. It would be very interesting if we get to the end of November and Man United are not top of that group. Because if they're going in at home to Young Boys and they haven't wrapped up that first spot or haven't wrapped up qualifying anyway, and they are someone that I just alluded to. If they finish second and Ajax or Dortmund are 1 and 2, if Man United came out against Ajax or Dortmund, they're there for the taking.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think Ajax or Dortmund could do them over. So I think they need to get that under wraps ASAP. Next group is another really interesting one because it's almost the best of the bunch elsewhere. And unless you really know your football and you explore the European leagues outside of the top five, you might have said Salzburg would have finished bottom of that group. But if you know how they're developing and the team they've been building over the past year, I mean, you've only got to look at the sales they made last season well, into this summer even, four of their key players had gone. Szoboszlai, Mwepu, Daka, Hwang, they all went. And here they are, top of a group with arguably some of the strongest teams in all the other nations, Sevilla, Wolfsburg and Lille.
Yeah, I think that is just kudos as to how the Red Bull franchise, both with Leipzig in Germany and here, Salzburg, just with how they're well-drilled and, you know, they're just very, very good at recruitment. They know what fits the club. They have a style of play. They have an ethos and, you know, they're hated for it, but they're good at it. And as you say, in a group there with teams that are strong in their own right, in their own leagues, and Sevilla with a really good, especially Sevilla actually, who are almost kind of, not quite Champions League specialists, but certainly in the Europa League have had some successes, loads of success over the years. No mean feat, but as you say, they've come in top of the group. I still think that one's wide open, to be fair. Lille were hit and miss. French league, not quite as they were when they won it. Wolfsburg, Bundesliga goes from strength to strength and they're up there. And so actually, of all the groups, probably that one is the most interesting one to keep an eye on, to be fair.
Yeah, because I think Lille are dead and buried. I mean, we know the story behind Lille and you've only got to look at, well, we might allude to it in the French league there, from going from champions to chumps, really. They've lost everything. I think they're the only ones you probably could rule out, to be honest. I think Wolfsburg and Sevilla are definitely up there for going through. Just depends whether Salzburg can maintain their form, really. And then finally, Group H, probably one of the easiest. Well, you would have said that. Probably one of the easiest to predict. But then Juventus had a weird league form, didn't they? Where you thought, oh, hello, are they in big trouble? The only one competition that they really seem to have maintained their form in is the Champions League. And to turn over the champions when they were not that long ago, as we kept alluding to in our little Wheel of Wonders, was they were mid-table not that long ago, Juventus, in a league that they should arguably be up there in. And I think it's an odd one, but I don't think we had any quarrels that it would have been Chelsea and Juventus going through. It's just what way round, I think, is more surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, their form in Serie A has been, well, nothing close to... certainly not what we're familiar with. But as you say, they've kind of isolated that in the Champions League. And to come out and beat Chelsea was quite a statement. And they slowly but surely, in the wider scheme of things, seem to be picking that up. So, you know, they've turned it round. And as you say, all of a sudden, I mean, look, Zenit aren't easy. Zenit are a team that, you know, Russia's not the easiest place to go to. So you're still looking there. Could there be a potential banana skin? Maybe not for Juve because they've got the 6 points in the bag. But I wouldn't say that's a foregone conclusion. And then obviously you're looking at the route to the knockouts and vice versa and stuff. And yeah, keeps that one a little bit interesting, to be fair. Maybe not as exciting as the latter group we just discussed. But interesting all the same, but you'd expect Chelsea to do the job and Juventus to finish and wrap up where they've left off.
Give me two finals you could potentially see happening. I know it's obviously luck of the draw, so that's why I'm not, you know, I don't want you to work it out too much, but give me two finals that for some reason you just feel, if it went that way, you could see happening. Two random finals of teams that you definitely feel could be there.
Liverpool-Bayern.
Oh, funny enough, that was mine. That was actually my one. We've not seen it yet, have we?
No.
Which is odd, considering their sort of consistencies. But that was actually one, exactly that game that I had on my mind.
And again, I'd have to put Liverpool in one because I think they're probably nailed on for the final. Liverpool again with probably one of Juve or Chelsea.
Hmm. I personally wouldn't have had Juve. I would have probably said Chelsea were one of those four teams. Yeah, definitely Liverpool, Bayern and Chelsea. Do you know what? For some reason, I have a feeling we haven't the last of Suarez and co. If there was a season where Barcelona just had one more bag of shit thrown at them, it would be Suarez and Griezmann, wouldn't it? It just seems written in the script that the team that Barcelona have gradually shifted out of their doors ends up being the one team that sort of... They're not my... You know, I'd say Liverpool, Bayern and Chelsea were definitely one, two and three. But if I was to throw a spanner in the works, I wonder whether Atletico Madrid just might have a bit about them.
Fair shout.
Bit of a shout, but... With the way Barcelona are going, I just feel like there might be one more thing. I think Atletico have a bigger chance of reaching the final in a weird way than Messi may have. I don't know why. I just think it's going to be a big story that Messi just can't even really do it with PSG. I just have a feeling.
I don't think Paris Saint-Germain are going to make it to the final. I really don't.
I think Simeone's got a lot more than Poch to offer as well in terms of experience and everything. I just wonder as well whether that might be the exit for Poch if you just can't get PSG over the line with that front three as well. I don't think there's any more to offer with him, do you? I don't know whether Conte comes in something like that.
I was saving that for Liga 1 when that came.
All right, well, let's see if we get there then, because I think we've summarised Champions League as much as we can. Let's go on to the next league then. And if it lands on Uber Eats, then happy days. But remember that, we'll come back to it. So we got the big boy out of the way first. That went pretty well, at least. So let's see where we go now. This would be a quick get your internet browser out and look at what's going on if this lands completely left field. But here we go. Well, Jesus Christ, we stay in Europe. So... Europa League and Conference League now. So that's interesting. We've left all the individual leagues till last.
Well, let's start with the Mickey Mouse one first.
Really? You're going to start with the worst one?
Yeah. I mean, look.
We don't need to summarise all the groups. I don't think some of them, I don't think people will even realise exist. There's certainly some teams that need to be mentioned as to whether they could be reaching the final.
Yeah, and for me, well, you've got Roma, the main ones for me. I think they're probably, not that I'm biased or anything, I think they're probably favourites. Then you've got Tottenham.
Is it written in the script? When you talk about scripts being written,
I see where
Spurs you're and Jose, and then Jose showing what it means to have a manager who knows how to win things. I still think he's got one more. I think we did him dirty, you know. I think he wants it as well, in a weird way.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, when I look at all the teams in the league or whatever it is, I don't see anything but a Roma-Tottenham final, pending they obviously don't meet each other in the knockout rounds further than that. And that's no disrespect, because you've still got the likes of Feyenoord in there, and maybe Rennes. Rennes look impressive, but you know, when you look at the two together, really and truly, they should be the ones in the final. And like you say, Jose probably wouldn't mind that, and I would back him to the Gill. I think Jose will want this for Roma. He's made an impact in Serie A almost immediately, which I thought he would, because I think, like with Inter, when he was at Inter, the league suits him, the way the football's played. He knows how to get the best of players. He knows the style well. And I just think there's probably... Look, he got a lot of stick when he left Spurs. He got a lot of stick that he was finished as a coach. The modern game is too far ahead of him now and not in line with his practices. And I think he's got a point to prove. And I agree with you. I think with Spurs, ultimately, it was pushed out by various people who maybe didn't like to hear what the truth was. And so they thought the best way to deal with it is get rid of him. But for, you know, for Nuno, this is big because even though this is a new tournament, this is an opportunity to lay down a winning marker. You know, Harry Kane wants a trophy. Now, this trophy, no one heard of this trophy up until kind of 6 months ago. But apart from Feyenoord and Roma, I'll maybe include Alkmaar in that. Not really teams. I mean, look, let's be blunt. Spurs should be beating those teams. So this, for Nuno, is the best opportunity to, well, if you want to win the dressing room and win round Harry Kane, say, look, this is where, you know, you're in the right place. You need to be winning this trophy, really. It's probably written in the stars, as you say, isn't it? Spurs, Nuno, junior meets senior, ex-club. If UEFA could write it and fix it, I'm sure that's how they'd probably do it because, you know, you need that first tournament to be a success and get eyeballs on it, don't you?
So, I just don't think you do someone that dirty and get away with it. I just have a feeling. And if there's ever a Spursy moment, it would be that Spurs land in probably the easiest competition they'll ever get to win. And the one team they come up against happens to be their ex-manager who turns them over in the final. Just happens to be perfectly written where I'm like, almost similar to Atletico. It's just one of those where if you want a headline, there is.
Agreed.
And yeah, I don't think we need to say much more than that. Europa League, however, I mean, this is a tournament that strikes me as getting stronger and stronger and more important as the years go on, especially when you see how it's elevated teams like Sevilla, you know, your Villarreals and whatnot, and how that's done for them over the past, you know, few years. And they've really made a name for themselves, especially managers as well. How they've performed and ended up going on to bigger and better things. But you look at some of these leagues, and again, Jason, you know, teams that we expect to be winning groups are just not there. I mean, you don't even really have to go too far down until you already hit one of those. I mean, Rangers, bottom of Group A on no points in a league with Sparta Prague and Bromby after dominating Scottish football. Real Sociedad, I would have thought, would have been definitely top of Group B, but it's PSV and Monaco. Bit of a tough group, to be fair, but
Monaco surprised me, though, because Monaco's league.
Monaco are not doing very well.
No.
But league form, Sociedad, you'd say, would be. But then when you get to Group C, I mean, is there a group that's more surprising than that one? Napoli and Leicester, bottom.
Yeah, I was going to say, that for me is probably the pick of the bunch. But it just shows, we spoke about it when we speak about West Ham and Leicester and their seasons, you know, the season's aspirations. And the Europa League is probably, when you balance it out with competitive competition, the hardest to balance. By Leverkusen, for me, they're the ones to watch, I think, this year in the Europa
League. Yeah, hot shots in Germany as well. Great young team as well. Great young team.
I genuinely think they're the ones to watch. I would have said, as you said, Real Sociedad, but they haven't quite translated that league form yet into this. And then obviously we don't know the ramifications yet of the Champions League dropouts that then feed into the knockout phase. But if you look at it face to face, and props to West Ham as well, two play, two wins. But for me, it's, you know, you've got to be looking at your Napolis and Leverkusens at the minute for the Europa League. And then, you know, that will change. The landscape will change once the dropouts from the Champions League come, as I said. But for me, they're the kind of two. If you'd say to me the two finalists, I'd say Napoli and I'd say Leverkusen for me.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the one thing I don't like about the Europa League is it gets heavily influenced by Champions League dropouts, and I don't overly agree with it, to be honest. couple of other honourable mentions other than the ones you maybe already touched upon. Frankfurt have a bit about them. If they can sort of get their form up a little bit, they were a tough team last season. Obviously, Sarri and Lazio, as you said, you know, Immobile and Milinkovic-Savic. I mean, they're not players to frown upon. If they can pick up a bit of form, and another one is, funny enough, in the same league as Leverkusen, Real Betis. They're not teams to be snobbed at. You know, Manuel Pellegrini is their manager. Nabil Fekir still there. Pulled out some great performances last season in La Liga. So there's a few teams there that can cause problems other than the other ones that you mentioned. So, yeah, it's an interesting league. Interesting tournament, should I say. But it's just something that can be turned on its head by what happens in the Champions League. So until we know that, I guess it's going to be difficult. So maybe come the next international break, we might have a bit more of an idea as to where these teams are and where the tournament is or how the tournament is looking to be shaped up. So that's them two done. So now we get on to the leagues. So the first one is... Let's go, La Liga.
Well,
you alluded to it. I don't think I need to be a betting man to know where you're going to start with first.
I mean, look, it was the story of the summer, wasn't it? And I don't know your perspective on this, to be honest, but let's just take the subject of Ronald Koeman for a second, because rightfully so, for various reasons, he's under the microscope. I can't get my head round how we've got to a point where they're speculating about a new manager. And I'll tell you why. Is, say if they brought in the manager from Ajax, say even if they brought in a Conte, anyone, any manager, I don't think, and this is a bold statement, I don't think there's any manager, top manager in Europe, that deals with the Barcelona situation better than what Ronald Koeman is doing at the moment. And people can say, oh, but they're ninth, they're not playing well, they're not this and not that. You've got to factor in, he took that job thinking they'd sign Messi, he was re-signing. He took that job thinking he had Messi. He then got, obviously, Depay and Aguero in. And you're thinking, oh, you know, things aren't too bad. Then he's basically had the rug pulled from underneath him and Messi hasn't happened. Aguero, for all the well in the world, the reason why I'm sure he had numerous offers out on the table, but I'm sure one of the reasons he picked Barca not only was to enjoy the life in La Liga and Spain again, but also because he's reuniting with Messi, right? So I don't think, and when you break it down in context, is, yeah, they've only won two of the last five league games, but after seven games, you know, and they've got a game in hand on Sociedad in third. Not saying they're going to win it, but they're still only 2 points off the top four. And for a team that's been decimated, not just on the pitch with the player, you know, losing Messi, but the way they've been manhandled financially by La Liga and told to cut the salary right down, I don't think he could have done a better job.
I mean, let's be fair. The whole situation is crazy. You look at the scapegoats with the players. We spoke about that with the Messi situation, how regardless of the financial situation, the Barcelona fans looked to players like Umtiti and whatnot and gave them an absolute grilling. Again, scapegoats, more scapegoats. It just seems to be brush it all under the carpet, but God forbid you blame someone within the Barcelona circle.
Well, the board aren't going to take any responsibility.
Of course they're not.
Let's face it.
Well, of course they're not.
Come in, they've inherited a shit show, to be fair, but they're not going to turn around and say results on the pitch. They're going to still come back and say, well, we've got Depay in, we've got Aguero, we've got these players in. But, you know, to be fair to Koeman as well, he also had to deal with the fact that even when they announced Aguero, they might not have been able to have Aguero because of the salary cap implications. So, to be fair to Koeman, look, he wins that game in hand, all of a sudden, they're back up to kind of fourth. And look, they're not going to win La Liga this year, but they're a club in transition. I don't think they could... If they change manager now, or if he loses that game in hand and they sack him, I guess my question to, for me, to them and to Barca fans would be, you oust him out, you sack him. What does that solve? It doesn't change a thing. Barcelona for the next, well, God knows how many seasons and years, they're going to be under restraint. I don't think it, you know, changes anything.
Well, I mean, instead of sort of making it a Barcelona show, I mean, it was obvious this was going to be one of the topics of the league because we haven't really had a chance to really go at it, to be fair, with Barcelona. But sitting in ninth spot, you know, that league's looking pretty tight, to be fair, from, you know, 12th upwards, 11 points all the way up to 17. I mean, how do you see it shaping? Do you see it being a battle of the current top two teams for the league?
Clearly, he had an opinion there. I actually think that I think Sociedad will maintain their good little team. Obviously, they have their way of bringing in players and playing. And hard one to call between the two Madrid clubs because at any point you feel like they could drop points. But I think Sociedad will be up there and probably be the ones to watch. Actually, I think. Villarreal, for me, I'd like to see more from them, though. They're in 11th at the moment. Again, as you say, it's tight. They're only 3 points off Sevilla in fourth, but I'd like to see more from them. But I think Sociedad will be the ones to watch. They're keeping on the heels of the Madrid clubs at the minute, and they haven't lost, well, the last five games. They've won 3, drew 2. Both Madrid clubs have lost games respectively in the last 5. So they're, for me, are the interesting team to watch, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, my dog seems to think that Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid are going to be the top two, judging by that response.
Yeah, funny. That's kind of the gist I got. That's the kind of gist.
Yeah, he's being a bit vocal. He's kicking off. Maybe he's telling us to move on. I don't know. Maybe he's bored of listening to La Liga. Seems to be always, you know, a two-team show, but definitely something we needed to discuss. And I still think Atletico Madrid's have got something, whether it's the La Liga or the Champions League, where they make their stamp and kind of give it back to Barcelona, I don't know. But I definitely feel it's something that, you know, is written in the stars anyway. There seems to be a few of them this year. Right, on to the next league then. We move on. See where we go from here. We land in Germany, in one of the more competitive leagues, I'd say.
Brilliant league, brilliant players. Leverkusen, for me, again, I mentioned it in the Europa League part there, but they have come out of the traps and they keep going and going.
I know Bayern have dominated in previous years and whatnot since their, you know, what you could call their dynasty. I think they've almost made it 10 years on the trot, haven't they? Prior to that, though, it was always a flip. You know, you had Dortmund, you had Wolfsburg, you had Stuttgart, you had Werder Bremen. I mean, the fact that Werder Bremen aren't even in that league anymore, you know, and they won it, what? I know it's 20 years and that's a long time, but when you're talking about a status of like a team like Werder Bremen, it's crazy to think that they're now not even in top tier. But yeah, they always seem to have teams in and around. I mean, second spot changes all the time. You've got Leipzig last season, Dortmund the season before, you had Schalke. And I mean, you talk about a fall from grace. Schalke 2017-18 finished second. They're now not in top tier.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Wolfsburg, Leverkusen, again, Werder Bremen, as I said. It just forever changes. And then obviously, yeah, with Leipzig coming in, well, quite recent when you talk about history, it just forever changes. But then you've always got those teams in around that you know of, that Mönchengladbach, as you said, Wolfsburgs. So it seems to always be tossing and turning, especially mid-table. I mean, I've never seen mid-table like it. It's so close. But yeah, I mean, Bayern, I can't see anyone taking, I can see Bayern making it 10 seasons on the trot, which is crazy, really.
We say it every year, don't we? Dortmund pushed them close, a few teams pushed them close. But yeah, I don't think that they're a winning machine. I don't see anyone ever. Unfortunately for that league, that is the one thing that it needs to happen. But I don't.
Yeah, they need a Barcelona to happen, didn't they, for Bayern? But look, let's put some respect on the Bundesliga's name, because it's probably one of the most well-run leagues in Europe. You know, you will never see loyalty to fans in any other league quite like Bundesliga. They are just so respectful. So yeah, it's a shame that, you know, it is so one-sided, because you'd like to think it could be more competitive, bearing in mind how well it's run. But it's just the way it is. It's the way it is. But yeah, I don't think we need to talk about it too much other than Bayern. But yeah, fair play to teams like Leverkusen this season and Wolfsburg. They seem to be keeping up the pace, but I don't think it'll be long until Bayern stretch their legs and start taking it and running with it, really.
Agreed. No, agreed. I think eventually, when push comes to shove, they'll just hit another level, as they always do. And it'll be normal service resumed. Big season for Dortmund, though. They need to kind of hang in there. They probably need Champions League football just to, well, even soften the blow with the inevitable sale of Haaland, it seems, next summer. So, yeah, important for them. Big season for them in that respect. Jude Bellingham as well. Obviously, I don't foresee him leaving there for a couple of seasons, but his stock is quickly, quickly rising again. But yeah, you'd think that to keep, well, Haaland, I think, is halfway out already, but Bellingham, he seems like a grounded lad, but you'd think to kind of have a chance of keeping hold of him for the longer term, they need to make sure that they're maintaining that kind of Champions League presence. So big season ahead for them in that respect.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Haaland, but I think, well, not just because of how Sancho's playing at the moment, but I definitely think Haaland is the one that they're dreading. They brought in Daniel Malen from PSV, who was, you know, probably one of the best prospects in Dutch football. He's only 22 years of age. So you'd like to think that maybe he's got a lot to offer, probably nowhere near, you know, what Haaland offers the team. But, you know, it's a good signing. And the thing with Dortmund is, I trust them to make good signings. I just feel that their scouts are just up there as one of the best. I mean, you've only got to look at the players that they've generated over the past 10 or so years, probably even before that. You've got Reina coming through, only 18. It's hard to forget. I mean, look, this is a Dortmund side that currently sit, what, third in the table. And if I read out some of their injuries that they've got now, I'll miss out the Haaland one, because obviously he's picked up an injury over the international break, which probably is the last thing they needed, bearing in mind the players they already had missing. But they had Reina missing, Guerrero missing, Akanji missing, Thorgan Hazard was missing, Dahoud. You've got Moukoko, who's their 16-year-old, who they think is going to be one of the biggest talents in world football coming through at Dortmund. So that's a lot of players that they've got missing, and they're still up there. But now the Haaland one's come through. You kind of wonder whether that might be just one step too far. But, I mean, if Dortmund can get in the price tag that's been thrown around, I mean, if he carries on this season doing what he's doing, I don't think they're going out of their way to be cheeky and ask for 150 mil, that's for sure. And I think all eyes will be on Haaland, especially whilst other strikers around him, cough, 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 don't hit the high heights this season. Because if I'm Man City now, do you turn your attention away from a certain North London club and start eyeing up someone like Haaland instead? Because
well, I think
age is certainly on Haaland's side, isn't it? And form seems to be.
I think you have to. I think, unfortunately for Kane, without going into it too much, I think his time's up. I don't, you know, by the time we get to next summer, you know, he's another year older, and I don't really know where he goes from there, to be honest. I mean, he's 28 now. By the time next season comes around, he'll be 29. I mean, top teams would only normally, well, I mean, Ronaldo's an exception, but with his injury records and stuff, with his ankle and the knocks and all that, you think 29 next year, he's probably got, what, two more seasons in him before he hits, what, 31, 32?
And the other thing I'd be considering, and again, we don't want to make this, we don't want to talk about the Premier League, so I'm still trying to keep it linked to Haaland here, is for Man City, when you look at the demand that's on Harry Kane's shoulders, not just at club level, but at international level, the risk attached to a Harry Kane transfer is far greater than a Haaland risk. I mean, Norway, can you really see them making massive tournaments and going the distance? So when you weigh it up, not just in form, not just with age, but also the risk of international, I just think the Harry Kane transfer, especially when you're putting those price tags so close together, the risk is just far greater. And I just think when you talk about, I mean, we said it with the other transfer Man City made in the summer. Imagine bringing in Kane as well. I mean, all the dynamism's gone. Haaland could probably inject that back into them. So I definitely think that's the one to watch. And it'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it, whether that's going to happen or not. I think the big question is going to be with Haaland, if Mbappe leaves for Real Madrid, do PSG see him as an option? Is Lewandowski reaching his end of his tenure with Bayern Munich? So my big question is, do City take the plunge before other teams come calling? That's the big one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Bayern going for him. And the only reason I say that is they spent big money on Sané, obviously, but they're not traditionally, they're not accustomed to, when I say big money, obviously they do spend big money, but when you talk about £150 million players, you know, if you're talking around that arena, I don't think they're in that trajectory. And look, who knows? It could be completely ridiculous. Newcastle stay up this year. It could be that, you know, they come in with a stupid offer for him. Not that I think he'd go there, but you just don't know. But certainly, I think it's between City, Paris Saint-Germain, United, and then, because it will take that super money to buy him out. It really will. And then the other question, of course, is Jude Bellingham. He's got to be on someone's radar up in the next couple of years, surely. And, you know, where does he go? He arguably, ironically, is probably the one player that Man United need.
Are you saying that you don't think Haaland is foaming at the mouth at the prospect of moving to Tyneside?
Well, money talks. Really.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, he hasn't gone to Dortmund to win trophies per se, is he? Because Bayern Munich clearly pam, 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 pam win the league every year. So he's not gone to Dortmund for the trophies. And with someone like Raiola, is he going to go for trophies or is he going to go for the money?
And I think it was a Haaland looking at which club suited his development better. And I don't think there's a better club out there than Dortmund at this moment in time. I think Haaland looks at Lewandowski and just thinks, I'll have a bit of that. And you just wonder, Lewandowski was at Dortmund, goes to Bayern. They probably need a new striker. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting, but I think we've discussed it, but we'll probably assess that. Well, I would have thought it would be the summer will be a big topic of discussion now, because I don't think we're going to have a window like it. I think the last time I remember a window being this exciting for one club spending was the Man City one with the Robinho era and all of that. So I think we'll see. We'll see with Newcastle and what they do. But we've got three more leagues to go, so I'm conscious of time. We'll move that on, and then we'll obviously we've still got our predictions to go. So let's see where we land now. Well, probably won't have too much to speak on here, because we've already alluded to it a little bit in the Champions League. We do land in France, Uber Eats. Now, the league in itself, pretty one-sided as expected. And yet, things just still aren't all, you know, roses, are they, in Paris? Because the Messi saga goes on, the Neymar saga, the Mbappe saga, the Pox saga. It just doesn't seem to end. I mean, I alluded to it not that long ago that things weren't looking too good in regards to Messi. And they lost to Rennes, obviously, the last time that there was a fixture in the league. I was going to mention this in the Champions League segment, and I thought I'd hold it back. Do you think the problem with PSG is, and maybe this is maybe backing up your point with Neymar, do you think the big players get lazy when it comes to league football in France and think, I just don't want to churn out 20 games a season? And is it sod's law that injuries seem to crop up with Neymar now more than ever? And Messi, not until what? That game, I think. That was his first game for PSG in the league.
Paris Saint-Germain, for me, are a prime example of what could have gone wrong at Man City and what Newcastle, if they're not careful, could happen to them if they get it wrong. Paris Saint-Germain are lucky, may be the wrong word, but rest assured, if the French League was the same stand as the Premier League and they had the problems they had behind the scenes with players in, you know, all this constant speculation and players turning up for 15 games here, there, whatever, the outcome would be different. Now, the only reason they are top is because, let's face it, Lille obviously hit self-destruct financially. Same with Lyon as well. Marseille have always been Marseille. There's always drama at Marseille, to be fair. But that is the only reason Paris Saint-Germain are where they are, because there are no other clear challenges. Now, we're sitting here and saying they've had a bad season. You know, Pochettino, can he handle Messi, whatever? Obviously, they lost, as you said, to Rennes as well. But we're sitting here and they've still won four of their last five, and they've, you know, they've won eight of their nine games and only lost the one, and only conceded nine goals and scored 22. So, look, on paper, it's not a bad season. But time after time after time, there are problems off the field. If it's not Neymar they're speaking about, it's Mbappe. And if it's not hit, it's someone else. And I think the problem is Neymar went there to be golden boy and was sold a promise. But then the problem is Mbappe was sold as the kind of Parisian golden boy, returned to home, because obviously he moved there for family reasons at the time, or so he said when he left Monaco. So I think you've got a number of things going on at Paris Saint-Germain where everything they're doing is manufactured. You know, nothing's within the fabric of the club. They've become a brand. They're not a football club with an identity, let's face it. They've become a team of individuals, a team of Galacticos, if you like. But at least when Real Madrid in the 90s put together a team of Galacticos, it gelled. It worked. They found a way, and they were a unit. You remember, you know, some of those, you know, Zidane, your Makalevis, your Luis Figos, your Ronaldos. They all had a purpose in that team, but they all bought into the team. And that sounds really, really wanky, like, you know, they're great team players. But the top, top players, the top, top players that succeed are the ones that pull together and knit together their teams.
The league for PSG is just not enough.
And you can tell it's getting to the owners as well, because I don't know if you've seen the quotes floating around with Mbappe the last couple of weeks, where he's saying the owners knew his intentions and he spoke, and that's why he spoke early in the summer about leaving Paris Saint-Germain. Look at him now. You've got the owners calling out Real Madrid, saying they should get sanctioned because of the way they've handled Mbappe and, you know, tried to go after him. You've got Mbappe saying, well, Paris Saint-Germain knew where I stood. They're telling me I can't leave for nothing. Well, you know, I'm not a commodity and I'll do what's best for my career. So clearly, there's not a connect either between board, you know, board level and football operations level and on the field, because you've got Paris Saint-Germain peddling the narrative that Mbappe, to all intents and purposes, is going to sign a new contract. And you've then got them coming out and saying he's never ever going to leave for nothing and he wouldn't do that to Paris. And then you've got Mbappe coming out and saying, well, I told them what my intentions were earlier in the summer and they didn't decide to resolve the situation. So that rubs off on players. And when you've got a group of players that are big personalities and, you know, big players, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look, we talk about the league briefly. When you look at the big teams, I mean, 9 games, everything we say now could mean shit come the end of the season. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Clermont, you know, were top three and all of a sudden now they're 4 points off relegation. So things change too quickly for us to really do a deep dive on this league. A couple of notices. You probably look at that top four and think, actually, what's going on here? To be fair, other than PSG, you've got Lens, Nice and Angers. Angers definitely being one.
Well, again,
I don't think anyone expected them.
You look at Nice, like Freiburg in Germany. Nice have got the best defensive record in France.
Yeah, 4 goals conceded. It's crazy. But then you've got, obviously, Monaco, once Giants, Lille, Lyon, all sitting in the middle of the pack. And you think, well, you know, the league's the chain. I mean, St Etienne at the bottom, can't believe that. That's one that seems to surprise me every week. So, yeah, in regards to the league, it's interesting. It's also really interesting to see that you have to get down to 8th spot before you find a PSG top goal scorer. And when you've got a front line of Neymar, Messi and Mbappe,
well,
I mean,
that says it all, doesn't it?
It says a lot, doesn't it? And that's Mbappe. Neymar and Messi are, well, they're not even there. I've got down to 40th and they're still not come up. So I think that goes to show what their situation is and where their priorities lie anyway. But pretty much a foregone conclusion, as it always is with the league. I'm sure we'll keep up to date with it. And the moment things start turning a little bit sour, we'll be all over it, because if there's another team that we kind of want, it's a shame it's got Poch attached to it, but I'm sick of it, to be fair.
Question for you before we wrap up on that one. Pochettino, what happens to him if he doesn't win the Champions League this season?
I mean, it's harsh because...
Where does he go? If he can't get the best out of that front three, where does he go from here?
I know that's easier said than done, that front three, but let's be fair, Mbappe, Neymar and Messi... In a league where you
not
don't,
just the
I mean,
front three. I mean, look at the midfield. I mean, they've got decent midfield as well, to be fair. But you know, what happens to him?
I think it depends on the draw. If they get a draw that favours them throughout, and he doesn't win it, I think it could be game over. I think Conte's waiting. I'm not going to lie. I think he's waiting in the ranks for that job. I think Poch takes a step down if he doesn't go. And it would be interesting because we talk about your boy, Solskjaer, and you talk about Nuno. I personally, I think if Man United come on the table, I think Poch goes there. I just have a feeling it. The Spurs thing is just a step too far.
Do you see Poch taking on a project like Newcastle?
Nah. No, I think he's had his projects.
Where the pressure is less?
No, I don't think so. I think he would be... I think he would rather the Man United job. Right, let's spin the wheel. We've got two more leagues, probably a little bit to talk about in each, but let's see how we get on. First being... the Championship.
Oh, so that's the continental option till last.
Tale of familiar standings, if it wasn't for Coventry. Well, because Bournemouth, West Brom, Stoke, Fulham and QPR in the top six, you'd be thinking, and even Huddersfield in seventh, you'd be like, ugh, typical that Grand Theft Auto meme, ah, shit, here we go again. But Coventry are just the ones, aren't they, that are throwing spanners in the work week in, week out.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Stoke have surprised me as well. They've struggled a lot the last few seasons. I didn't foresee their uptake in form this year. Not that I know too much about them, so I could be completely wide of the mark. But, you know, they have. But you're right, the talking point there, Coventry, I mean, they lost 5-0 to Luton Town and then beat Fulham 4-1. That is the nature of the Championship. But before that heavy loss to Luton, you know, they've just been on fire. But I think Bournemouth will stay up there. West Brom will stay up there. But again, you know, you're looking at probably, again, it's early on, but I wouldn't see, but, you know, you look from kind of, well, sixth, ironically, where the playoff place is cut off. QPR upwards, really. QPR up to second. So anything from those top, you know, kind of, second to sixth will fight out for second, I think. Blackburn, if they're a bit more consistent, could be up there. But, you know, the Championship, you need a fair bit of wind behind you, a bit of luck, your injuries to keep on side. Obviously, it's unique in that most teams play 2-3 times a week and it can be quite congested at times as well. So, look, there's a long, long way to go.
Before we hit the bottom of the table, because obviously that's a big topic, are you surprised that Scott Parker's been able to do it at Bournemouth? You know, that's Fulham and Bournemouth now. Or were Bournemouth always a team that, you know, if he had a better job than Fulham to jump into, it would have been Bournemouth? Or do you think there's credit to be had here?
I mean, the fact that they lost their best player in Dan Juma, you know, it's quite late in the window. Bournemouth were one of them. I thought Bournemouth would struggle this year. They've always had, you know, they had a decent team, but this league is hard. It's really, really hard. And when, you know, you look at Dominic Solanke and liken it to the Sheffield United situation with Ryan Brewster, Solanke couldn't hit a barn door in the Premier League. Difference is he's come into this league and he can smash them in. For Sheffield United, unfortunately for them, Ryan Brewster can't even do it at Championship level anymore. He did for Swansea, but a couple of seasons ago, but not no more. So, and for Scott Parker, I would say this was a big, big job because he inherited that Fulham team, but they're a very good Championship team and he got them promoted. So he's already done the hard part. Premier League was always going to be a tussle, but to be fair to him, he made a good stab of it. Going down to Bournemouth, that was, you know, it would have been the first job for him where he's like, right, I've gone from managing a team that was favourite in the Championship and I got them through to a team where obviously they ended up getting relegated. And then you go to a team in the Championship, we all know, unless you're Charity FC, aka Norwich City, it's very, very hard to rebound straight back up from Premier League relegation to fight your way back up and finishing in the top two, you know, God forbid, going for in the playoffs. So credit to Scott Parker. I think he's done a brilliant job down at Bournemouth. He's got them performing. He's got, you know, he's brought in some, They've got some brilliant young players down there at the moment as well that are playing some really good football. That are, you know, stepped up to replace Dan Juma kind of no problem. So props to him. It's easier said than done.
I mean, look, I'm quite negative when it comes to seeing the same old teams come up and down. I'm sitting there looking at that table and I'm hoping Coventry are one of those teams. I would like Blackburn to come back up. It's been a while. I'd love Bristol City to come up. They've always been in and around. The only team is Millwall. As long as they stay away, I don't really care.
Me and you both. Me and you.
Yeah,
both.
Yeah. But the in regards to the same old yo-yo teams, I mean, QPR has been a while, but still weren't that long ago. I remember them. Stoke, no thank you. But yeah, West Brom, Stoke, all of them. It's same as if Norwich went back down. I'd be thinking the same thing. I wish there were days when, you know, Forest could get back to where they once were. And I just like to see them same old, you know, new look teams come back up just to sort of add a bit of...
West Brom will find it tough. West Brom playing good football, but, you know, they've drawn their last two, hit and miss. Again, Coventry joint second with them, really. And between Fulham and West Brom is 2 points. And, you know, you look at West Brom, they've drawn four of their 11 games, which, you know, Bournemouth have done to a point, but, you know, they've won, ultimately won more. But with West Brom, there was a real danger at one point, you felt, that it was going to be draw after draw. And in fact, not long before the international break, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, West Brom played QPR. And it was a good game, but QPR dominated that game. And luckily for West Brom, they got back into it and actually ended up winning the game with about a couple of minutes to spare. But QPR had them and, you know, had they lost that, could have been a different complexion. And, well, had they lost that, they'd be currently sitting in sixth place. So it just shows the fine margins in the Championship. But, look, with the Championship, what I will say is, come February, this table could look completely different. And it's about injuries, fitness, luck, momentum. And quite plausibly, that the barometer is where teams are between kind of where they are in sixth. And at the moment, you've still got kind of, you can go down as far as Luton, really, probably is the cut-off. And they're only 4 points off sixth. So all it takes is for a Fulham to lose a couple on the bounce, or a QPR, even a Stoke, and then Reading to win a couple on the bounce, or Millwall win a couple on that, and all of a sudden it shifts. So, which is arguably why it's probably one of the most exciting leagues in Europe, because you've always got the to-ing and fro-ing. So,
well, you're absolutely right. I mean, Bournemouth, for example, just to sort of throw it out there, away to Bristol City, away to Stoke, home to Huddersfield, away to Reading in the next four games. Yeah. You know, all of a sudden they could find themselves clinging on to top six. West Brom have got Fulham within their next four games. So you're looking at that and thinking, well, there's something that could happen. Coventry away to Blackburn in their next game. All of a sudden, that's a close one. So you're absolutely right. There's certainly games there where you're sitting there thinking at the click of a finger, we could be looking at Bristol City in the playoff spot. And, you know, further. I mean, how long ago was it, Jace, that we were throwing out, you know, puns about Forest being rooted to the bottom of the table? Well, yeah. Here they are now in 17th on 11 points. They win their next two games, they're 10th. So, you know, it can change. I guess we better touch on it because it was arguably the story of the Championship. It seems every league has got one, without going into too much detail. But Derby, further added to the fire that, you know, it could be Mike Ashley's next victim.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Ashley... Well, so I appreciate Newcastle fans hate him. I still maintain that he wasn't...
I was about to say that. Would you say Derby fans are sitting there worried at that prospect? Or do you think they'll actually be quite welcoming to...
For what it's worth, and again, we'll touch on this next week more so in the Premier League one, but from a Derby County perspective, you know, Mike Ashley gets a lot of stick about how he didn't spend money, he didn't do this, and their net, you know, they talk about their net spend over 10 years at Newcastle only being about 12 million quid. But granted, they've suffered two relegations at the face of that, but for most of his tenure, they've been a Premier League club. And yeah, he's ran them on a shoestring budget, but he ultimately looked at it as a businessman. And look, the reason why Newcastle will be able to do what they'll be able to do in January is because in terms of FFP, Mike Ashley actually did a pretty good job of keeping the wages at a level and obviously generating the profit. Now, granted, most of that is because Sports Direct was branded across the stadium. As I say, he didn't spend too much, but no one can deny from a business perspective how astute he was in operating Newcastle. Now, it's likely Derby County are going to be hit with a further fine. So unfortunately for them, it probably looks like League One next year, regardless of if they carry on the trajectory, you know, of where they're at the minute. But they just need a safe pair of hands. And for the all the criticism Mike Ashley gets, at the end of the day, he's a frugal businessman. Rooney, to all intents and purposes, when you consider the circumstances, is doing a decent job. He's won three and drew five of the 11. So, but for the points deduction, I mean, they would be sitting kind of, well, where Blackpool and Millwall are. So only kind of 3 points off the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, why not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think at the moment they can be too picky, to be honest, with what they get. Anything to keep them up. And look, if they could be tasked with staying in the Championship or getting back into the Championship, let's be fair, look, Newcastle could have easily been relegated in the last 4 or 5 seasons, and there's been enough investment in there to keep them afloat. So it's interesting. And look, let's not forget, I think I saw an article earlier, and don't quote me on this, but I'm fairly sure it said something along the lines of Mike Ashley has thrown more investment into Newcastle than FSG have in regards to Liverpool and their net profit. So let's not, you know, I think it's easy to be blindsided
I'm going to save my thoughts on that for next week, but I have a particular rant about Newcastle fans and Newcastle as a club in general, to be honest. But I won't digress because I know we've got a set rule and we've done pretty well to stick on it. I won't digress. I will allow us to transition naturally into the last league, isn't it?
It is. It is the last league. And again, probably with what happened to Inter, one of the exciting leagues, I'd say, this year, because it is anyone's guess at this moment in time where it might be going, especially with Juventus throwing a spanner in the works, that's for sure. So, yeah, we are over in Italy. Serie A, I mean, you work your way down. It's you know, there's a good 2 to 3 point gap in between the positions from first to fourth. And then we hit a cluster, you could say, between fifth and ninth. But, I mean, you look at any one of those, well, I'd say easily 6 out of them 9 teams could win that league, you know, if they really wanted to. You thought Inter were going to open a gap, and then their financial burdens killed them off. Napoli goes straight to the top again. AC Milan have built themselves back up. You think Juventus might run away with it? They then hit a dire straits. And then Jose joins Roma to throw a further spanner in the works. So it's a pretty interesting league, I'd say, at this moment in time. And it's throwing out some pretty interesting games. Exciting games for once, I think, as well.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's Inter Milan. No one could have foreseen Lukaku leaving. I think everyone thought that Conte and Lukaku would build on where they left off last year and give maybe the Champions League a bit of a push. AC Milan obviously have been rebuilding over a number of years, so that seems to have clicked. Napoli have found themselves again, and obviously they're smashing it at the moment, not lost a game and won every single one that's been thrown at them. Juventus, I don't think anyone, even without Ronaldo, you would have still said that they had enough about them to kind of be up there, but they've been incredibly slow starting. But it sounds like financial implications and talk of Ramsey going off the wage bill and stuff. So in the background, there's probably things that have unsettled a little bit. Obviously, there was a bit of doubt over Dybala as well. But the big talking point has to be, well, again, not to be biased, but really and truly, Jose Mourinho coming in at Roma. Now, Roma have been on the periphery for a few years, but they, you know, they always kind of give it a good stab, fall away, and then ultimately end up.
In a funny way, they're almost the Spurs, aren't they, of Serie A?
Yeah, no, exactly that. And, you know, they've been unlucky at times. They really have. You know, they would get injuries at key points. So Zaniolo, obviously, a couple of seasons ago, got that big injury, which put pay to the momentum that they had. Fonseca, to be fair to him, didn't actually do too bad a job considering everything that ended up going on in the background. First season, he finished fifth, and then they got to the semi-finals in the Europa League. So he actually did a pretty good job, to be fair to him. This season under Mourinho, it's exciting. I think I called it before when Mourinho was announced, and I said, I actually think the two of them will go hand in hand. Will he have enough to win Serie A? I'm not sure. But look, if he can get Roma back in the Champions League, that'll be a start. And if you can get a bit of silverware through this new UEFA Conference League that has been put together, then I think for him, that's a solid season. And for Roma, as far as they're concerned, I think it's been too long, but, you know, without significant presence in the Champions League. But there's reasons to be hopeful.
Yeah, it's Serie A is definitely one to watch this year, just because of the fact it's so back and forth. I mean, to think Juventus are already 10 points behind Napoli, but it's also one of them leagues where, you know, in the end, it seems to always paint the same sort of picture. Inter was refreshing to see last year, and it's actually quite refreshing to see Inter still there. I thought that might be the end, and they'd end up doing a bit of what AC Milan did over the past few years. But it's good to see they're in and around. Definitely think there's a lot of young talent in Italy at this moment in time, further enhanced by their Euros performance. There's a lot of talent there, that's for sure. So it'd be interesting. The one thing that I think is missing for Italian clubs at this moment in time is, you know, it seems the days of dominating Europe have been long gone for quite some time. So I just wonder whether there's any surprises to come from any of the Italian sides. I mean, the fact that Napoli are top and they're in the Europa League is interesting. I just don't know what would come first, really. Obviously, Roma could bring in a Conference League trophy. Wouldn't say that would put Italy back on the map, but I think it's been a little while since one of them teams has kind of had a bit of real European success. So maybe that's something to keep an eye out on. I don't think they're quite there just yet, but it would be interesting to see. Yeah, I definitely think Italy is due a bit of European dominance. I think they've been missing that for quite some time. So it'd be interesting to see if that comes back around. And not to drag it out anymore, I'd say, Jace, we are done and dusted for the European show. I thought it would be more interesting than you know, discussing internationals. Lo and behold, there was a Nations League final, which probably was warranted to be discussed, but we weren't going to go there because, let's be honest, the Nations League doesn't put a star on its chest, does it? So for us, we wanted to dig in around and really explore European football and add a bit more to those middle segments that we do week in, week out, just to really elaborate on a few things that I'm sure we were itching to mention, but 1 minute just doesn't really do it justice. The final thing then, predictions for next week. So I understand you should have Cookie's score for your game. You should also have his game.
Do I have his game? I don't have his game.
You don't? Oh, well, that's all right then. I'll give it to you. But you've got his score for yours, yeah?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So do you want me to go with Cookies then first?
Yeah, go on then. You've piqued my interest now because it's quite a big week for us too next week. But I bet he hasn't gone with that one. He's gone different, I reckon. But
Yeah, I think it's all about which games are hardest to predict. Certainly some games that definitely peak my interest this week, because some of them are so hard to call and some of them come with big headlines. The game he's gone for, actually, though, is a West Midlands derby.
He's gone for the big 3 o'clock. Oh, it's a 3 o'clocker. I didn't realise that.
It is. It's Villa Wolves. And, well, Wolves in form, Villa hot and cold. I think that is a good game. Good game to throw in there. So, yeah, that's his game.
Interesting.
And Cookie, funny enough, has gone down, you know, has sat on the fence a little bit, but he's gone big. He's gone for 2-2.
Oh, do you know what? You took it right off the tip of my tongue. That's exactly what I was going to say.
You're going for that, are you?
No, and because he's gone for that, Cookie, your bell end. No, I'm joking.
Even though he is.
As soon as I saw that game, I said to all. As soon as you mentioned it, but I am going to change it because I don't want to go the same as him because I'm interested in winning this bloody thing.
You've got work to do.
I'm going to go for Villa, and I'm going to say 2-1 Villa.
Interesting. I'm going to make it even more interesting in this game because I think it deserves it. And funny enough, I haven't gone for this because you've said it. I was going to go for this scoreline anyway if it wasn't a draw. I am. I just wonder whether Wolves can go one further. I said when they hit the ground running, I feel like they've got something in them, and I hope he sticks to his guns. I'm almost sort of developing a bit of a sort of, you know, I've got a bit of eagerness for Wolves to do well off the back of their, you know, terrible start. But it didn't seem to me as fault of their own. And the fact that he's identified the solution, I hope he runs with it. I'll save yours till last. I'll go with mine first. Again, I've not. There was definitely a game there that had a headline all over it that involved my team. But I think we need to remember that Newcastle don't really kick in until January. And by that time, they could already be down. I'm going to go for a really big, big game. A six-pointer. I've gone to Southampton Leeds.
Ooh.
We kept talking about this Armstrong, and this is it. This is the run that we were alluding to all in the last two episodes, that Armstrong from here has massive, massive weight on his shoulders now. Games don't get any bigger than this for Southampton now. I don't think they've got a lot of big games coming up, and if Armstrong doesn't score, it's problem time. So the big question is, is Armstrong going to score, Jace?
I'm going to say no.
Go on then. What are you saying?
I'm going to say 3-1 Leeds.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah. Do you know what?
I think you're going to laugh at this because it seems like you've got a bit of a connection with Cookie this week.
Is he gone for exactly
this? He has. He has gone 3-1 Leeds.
The reason why I think Southampton, by the way, aren't going to win is because they haven't won a game yet. Leeds have. And I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like with Leeds, they'll think, right, we'll get this other win now, and then all of a sudden we're mid-table. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Leeds are going to run with this, but I think there's a bigger reason why Leeds might get the win here. And not only is it Armstrong, but it's Ward-Prowse. He's missing. Suspended, isn't he? So I'm going to go 2-1 Leeds. I don't think there's a bigger game than Southampton Leeds in terms of context for the table at the moment.
I'd agree.
I think it's massive. But yeah, we'll be interesting come Monday next week.
The table is looking very, very tasty then.
Very tasty. And yeah, we'll see. But go on then.
Careful what they look out for as well, because they are...
You think about it, Jace. I mean, Newcastle now have been taken over. What does that do with teams like Southampton and Leeds? I mean, are they shitting it now?
For what it's worth, I think between now and January, the 1st of Jan, Newcastle max pick up 7 points or nine or 10 points max. Because even if they bring in another manager now, he's still got to do with the same players that Steve Bruce has had. And with their run of fixtures coming up.
There's going to be a lot of nervy players as well. A lot of nervy players at this moment in time. Does their future lie now?
It's
Newcastle.
It's a real test for them. You know, that Tottenham, Palace, Chelsea in October, November, Brighton away, then Brentford and Arsenal.
What's your game?
My game is Brentford-Chelsea.
Ah, I had a feeling you might go for that.
I will give Cookie score first. And he has gone 3-1 Chelsea. He doesn't like Brentford.
Just wonder whether it's one step too far for Brentford. Yourself?
I'm back in Brentford. I'm going to say 3-2 Brentford.
God, Jace. You have taken a punt.
It'll be like the Liverpool game. And I think they'll go for it. And I think they'll win.
I just wonder whether this might be the first sign of naivety with Brentford or not.
International break for me would have done them good as well.
Obviously we've got the Lukaku situation, haven't we? We don't know he's pulled out with muscle fatigue of international. So it is an interesting one. I'm gonna stick with Chelsea, but I'm going to say it's a close one. I'll say 3-2 Chelsea. I'll go the opposite to you. Don't get me wrong, I'm hoping Brentford do it. But I don't know. I think it would be... All right, if Brentford do it, then, well, we're in trouble. Story is going to be massive.
And on that note, ladies and gents, thank you for joining us on Pod 20. Next week, as Scott has alluded to, Cookie will be back with us, pending no seagull has nicked any more of his chips, or indeed he hasn't choked on any more chips because he said he was off with a cough last week. So let's hope he's recovered. But until next time, I'm Jason. He was Scott. That was episode 20. I remember my first podcast.
See you later, all.
Ciao, folks.